online space, there's always the opportunity to make that connection with people. So the swooshes that you see show the connection between the two eyes, which serve as people, and then there's the third eye and the swoosh trying to make it a connection with that third person, which I thought was great. And he also has a design firm with his friends that he started in his spare time after school. So if anybody needs like a logo, let me know. I'll hook you up.
Right,
we like Brandon. I think John's already touched on these, but just to kind of even be more explicit, some of our overarching project goals is to really and primarily gain an understanding of how youth themselves view their presence online, how aware are they of what they're doing online, safety issues, privacy issues, how do they construct identity online. And then from there, identifying the possible risks and also the opportunities. I mean, we really stress the opportunities.
I have to say, just to that, the point of opportunities is I see a lot of people writing books that are kind of scary books, right? And you also see people writing government reports that basically talk about stranger danger, right? That's kind of the dominant theme. We should have the Leading Online Predators Act, right? And I think one of the things we want to do with this project is to use really good research, but then reverse the polarity a little bit to say, we get those concerns. I'm a parent, too. I have a 5-year-old and a not quite 2-year-old. I care about their safety and so forth, but I want them to live in this world in a way that they see as those opportunities. And as a public policy matter, how can we kind of change the debate to see both the challenges that we clearly mm-hmm. need to address, but then also the opportunities that we don't want to squander?
Exactly. And then finally, I mean, the last goal is then to be able to make recommendations that help advance the public interest.
I think Aaron has put in parentheses here the regulatory and educational framework. And I think this is actually one of the things for the Project Zero folks or others in the room. Aaron's background is in the education and sociology space. Some of us are lawyers. So one of the things we want to do is to have a platform of research from which we can make recommendations from different fields and to work in an interdisciplinary fashion, mm-hmm. which I think is both challenge and great opportunity.
And so we have a lot of questions, and we're going to stop at this slide, and I'm going to highlight a few of these questions and really hope that you guys can help give us insight into the questions themselves, and then also, really important for us empirically, how would we go about looking into these questions. So one of the things that we're really interested in is kind of the theme of recursion,
Just one?
Yeah, we'll just do one. So how do, you know, does technology develop first or the social norm? So if you think about a space like MySpace and the concept of friending on MySpace, and you have kids who have, you know, some of the kids who are on my Facebook, I'm on Facebook and I have
students with you on Facebook?
You have a lot of friends.
No.
So if they have, if you have like 300 friends on Facebook, how does that change their conception of what a friend is, if it does at all? So the idea of how that impacts them in the offline and online setting.
So let's just pause.
Well, sure.
Let's put it back up for the group. And I would love for the conversation actually not to revolve around me or even less Aaron, but we've got some researchers on the project. Jason has come all the way from New York to be here. Miriam from the West Coast, I think, and others. And Urs, are you out there somewhere? Or is Urs gone now? He's gone. All right. So maybe we'll email him or I have him to get it to. We'd love to talk about any of this and methodology as well as substance. But one question just to kind of throw out there was this question of recursion that we found really interesting. And I guess it's sort of chicken or egg-like, but be curious of your thoughts about whether or not these technologies are being developed for and about young people, or are the young people's activities themselves driving the technology development, or how does that that kind of feedback loop work, if at all? It seems to me a hard problem and one we wanted to at least start with as a conceptual matter.
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, a phrase that I've seen used, you know, the street finds its own uses for technology. You know, that the technologists don't always have much connection with the way that people will eventually use their inventions. And so that this development of the social norms is really all, you know, kind of almost independent of the development of the technology. The technologists aren't always even listening. I know now some of them have started to listen, and so, you know, and so the feedback loop has closed. But originally,
you know, the technologists were just sort of throwing stuff out
more
there.
More cathedral than bizarre. But Isaac, yeah. I see you screwing up your face. You must have some other feelings on this.
I think that particularly with the example you cited, Facebook, that it couldn't be further from the point. That Facebook in particular shows the
coevolution. Our example couldn't be further from the point.
No, that coevolution is indeed like the hallmark of this sort of an institution. I remember that when Facebook created the feed, which
the
allowed you
very
so easily.
Angry.
Oh, everybody was very, right. very upset.
It was
upset.
The largest Facebook group ever, most quickly created, right?
Simply to protest. And Facebook groups as a protest against Facebook is in itself sort of an interesting commentary on the way people perceive things.
Another form of recursion, I suppose, right? Yeah.
But they did respond to, now it's entirely modular, what appears on your Facebook feed, what doesn't. Some people don't use it at all, other people allow it to stay. And I think that, by responding to that, like, the desire for granularity as far as, like, how the feed worked, Facebook saved itself from having a large number of very, very upset users, possibly losing their user base, and in a sense, gained acceptance for the feed as a nobody now really complains that much about it. So
buried in this question is a presumption, I guess, to some extent, that this is an extension of the from consumers to creators thing. I mean, I think David Weinberger's work in Markets or Conversations and others is early precursors of this, but we're interested sort of in extending that in some way and thinking about if you have a generation of quote-unquote former consumers who are involved in the creation of these tools, how does that change the technology business, but also the way in which these social norms develop or don't develop?
Just using the Facebook example, recently Mark Zuckerberg has launched a Facebook platform which allows for any Facebook user to use the API to create applications of their own. And a lot of aspiring programmers have taken this advantage and started bringing out programs that everybody else can use.
So yes, is the answer.
Better than Google Maps.
I mean, it seems to me when you actually have two different sets of questions. So the first one I would say is sort of yes and no, and the second one is more exploratory. And I think the first one, you know, sometimes the technology drives behavior, sometimes it's the other way around. It really depends on the platform that you're using it.
And do you think that's changing, or is that sort of a static trend?
You've got a spectrum there. So I think, you know, some things are more along the lines of influencing behavior, others absolutely reflect and it seems like you're trying to plot along a line of engagement, the conversion of the consumer to the producer. And again, I think there's a spectrum there. And there's a lot of people who, it's hard to even define what those terms mean anymore in this space, really. You know, as somebody who posts to somebody else's blog, you know, there's someone a producer, someone a consumer, somebody else's knowledge. So it's a really kind of gray area.
Does that mean we shouldn't pursue it because it's so gray and hard to pin down, or does it actually mean that's really rich and it's something we should delve into and find new words for?
You cannot pursue something that's so rich and so unknown.
Right.
Yeah, it's just unknown.
Right. Well, it seems to me if we're thinking about, you know, one potential audience here of this work could be people who are interested in marketing stuff, right? I mean, that's a simple way to think about it. Or anybody who cares about the nature of the firm and how creativity works, right? It seems to me this set of questions is relevant to, you know, to both of those audiences at least.
Before I started at Project Zero, which was last week, I worked for 2 years with Henry Jenkins over at MIT in media literacy. So this is exactly the space that we were engaging in.
That's great, and one of our big heroes is Henry Jenkins in this grad, for sure.
I think that one of the things to consider is that the you have to think about what you're talking about defining as the technology, because I think that a lot of what we generally talk about as technology is just software that's being built up to mirror our social norms. And it's not, and the software isn't as, I mean, it's just, there isn't as much sort of technology breakthrough happening as there is just software being built to fit our social norms. So I think there's a difference between sort of the technology and just web applications that mirror our social norms.
I think of the two questions that you have up there, the second one is actually a little bit more interesting in terms of this project. The first one is so huge and so could be taken up in any one of a number of projects or might be an interesting connecting link between projects, but the second one seems to hit a little bit closer to home for trying to understand the ways that a young person might use a technology and what some of the policy impacts.
Well, just as devil's advocate, I mean, one of the reasons why I think this is a great project for the Berkman Center to lean into is because it can take on hard and large cross-cutting projects, right? So you could say, or problems, right? It hits privacy, intellectual property, you know, various different things that we care about, engagement in politics and education and so forth. So in some ways, it seems like trying to get at really big, really important questions is exactly the way to go. But I think your point is well taken, that the tighter, more synthetic version of the question might be where we end up aiming. But I think it's a good open question. Maybe just to segue, I'm happy to talk about any of these, and we should put them on the table. But I'd love to just put out really, before getting to methodological stuff, where do you guys think Berkman Center ought to be as a community? Not to be too navel-gazing, but as a community, how can we be helpful to this, lend leadership and focus and so forth, where we're good and where we have comparative advantage? And where should we leave it to other people? What in this seems like this is a great Berkman project to be charging into? Wow, stony silence. David.
The questions are someone answer the first two questions.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Oh, please.
Okay.
Please.
Then we get on to the next.
Yeah, yeah.
The first is they develop together, and it doesn't really matter.
Uh-huh. Why doesn't it matter?
Because it doesn't tell you anything.
Uh-huh.
If it were the case that technology leads to new social norms, then you could do a sort of technology, social physics sort of thing, maybe.
Right.
But if one believes it, as I do,
uh-huh.
In fact, they develop together, they're inextricably together. So
uh-huh.
Which comes first, your view of the world or your language for expressing
uh-huh.
it? And, you know, yeah, it's sort of both.
Uh-huh.
And the second one...
Which is to say, even as an empirical matter, it's not an interesting thing to pursue because it's so clear that they just work together and it's just how it is.
I don't think, personally, I think there's a sort of metaphysics, assumed metaphysics behind that first question,
uh-huh.
which I think doesn't, where's the chronology?
Uh-huh.
I mean, how would you ever sort out the first moment that somebody looked at Facebook
mm-hmm.
and figured out how to use it, and was it the social norms, or was it the two, which, there isn't any first, you know, I mean, there literally isn't a first. So, and if they are inextricably together, then the second question is, I agree, much more interesting. But it seems obvious to me the second question is, the answer is, and which is to say I'm probably wrong. That's
right.
What I say. It's obvious. Of course they are. The question is, how are the technological limitations of these tools? Because the limitations are the same thing, exactly the same thing as the, what's the opposite of limitations? The affordances. It's some set of things you can do and not other things. Those two things go together certainly as well. And yeah, of course, seems obvious to me that of course they transform the way they socialize, engage with the process, and understand themselves. So the question is how. So I'm going to address your Berkman question.
Yeah.
That is the question. That's everything. It's a question that you can imagine graduate school of sociology and anthropology asking, as in fact, of course they are.
Right.
And, political science and journalism schools are asking this. So this is it's mm-hmm. way big. So the easy Berkman angle on it is exactly the one you're talking about, which is, and what, where's the disconnect with policy, which is being made by digital immigrants.
Right. Or Luddites.
Mm-hmm. Or
Category
worse,
3, relevant. Right.
Stay at home.
Right.
What are the policy implications of the fact that the technological affordances and limitations are indeed transforming?
Right. Right, right, right. It sounds totally right to me, completely.
That's what you're doing. So.
No, just, but that's clearly the instinct. But it's, to me, there's also another overlay, which is the extent to which, if we lean into this from consumers to creators concept, you realize that technological limitations, take the Facebook API example, may well turn into, well, you could transform them into affordances by virtue of doing it yourself, and how much the ability to kind of do it yourself by this generation of people may well make those limitations less high as barriers. And it seems like there's some really interesting things as policymakers to understand things in that, as the Grokster opinion, Ninth Circuit Grokster opinion said, called a quicksilver technological environment. How do you legislate when things are moving so fast and when people can self-help so frequently? That seems to me a meta problem for policymakers, mm-hmm. is how to make decisions when you know that it's a slow timeline to make decisions when people can do it so much and the technology is changing, social norms are changing so fast. So, Jason, and then... Yeah.
But that seems like a totally more relevant issue. I mean, to me, I think it would be relevant for Berkman to be focusing on that meta policy of, like, how do... You know, what kind of things could we produce that would help legislators and lawyers make decisions about how to govern in an environment in which those decisions are, I think, occurring simultaneously.
Yep.
But I think
this is the key premise of the book, so don't.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, no, I'm like giving everything away. Buy the book still.
It'll be out for a year and a half.
But
entry literature at this intersection with the quicksilver and.
But to that point, I think that that's a very different set of, you know, questions and directions than the question that you have on the board there.
Yeah.
Because I agree. I don't think that the first question is necessarily Berkman relevant. I think it's a great question. I mean, I think that it's connected to what's going on, but I don't necessarily think that this is the right, like, people.
All right,
to...
if you, Sally, and David Weinberger say it sticks, it sticks. Anybody else?
Let me delete it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's right.
I worked at the MIT Media Lab for two years before I came here, and the first question up there is got people all over there, you know, crazy, trying to figure out.
See, iterative process. We answer the question. So.
There are all kinds of people there trying to figure out things involving open source and how people use developing platforms. And I just remember one presentation thing I went to last summer. They were talking about content developers versus content consumers.
Yeah.
And it's something like a pyramid, like rule of like a tenth.
Mm-hmm.
So like maybe a tenth of the people who see something
every
like Facebook.
Every technology startup has this pyramid, right? And it says, here are the super users who are 1% and they do everything. And then you've got the 10% who are like, we'll post some stuff. And then you've got the masses who read it, right?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So in terms
David
of that.
David consults to half of those companies. advises them on their pyramid.
We can only sell to 1% of those people.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The group that was gave the presentation, were they were Lego.
Uh-huh.
Four people from Lego.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the Berkman Center, one of the reasons I decided to work here instead this summer was because I was really more interested in the public policy side of things instead of, well, let's see what people have decided to try to do with Facebook today. And it's studying, there's studying the people, and then there's trying to figure out how we can help people do what they want without anyone getting hurt.
So should we leave the studying people to other people, learn from them, and then build on top of that generative style our public policy recommendations? Is that that's how
that's
you see it?
That's what I would.
Awesome. That's good. Crisp advice.
I think I've kind of fallen in Jason's camp. I think the most good can be done in reversing the polarities, like you said, in focusing your results in particular on the old guard, the people that still have the power, the people that are changing very slowly, rather than trying to produce something that is useful, you know, trying to hammer down the quicksilver when by the time you produce...
Can you do that?
No, that's the point. By the time you produce
the
something, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Everyone will have moved on, and you know, no one will, it'll be kind of old news, but I think a lot can still be done, because you just see these sort of reactionary responses to every time something breaks, and then everyone flips out, and then you get some ham-handed response to it. And I think that's where some could really sort of maybe sort of guard against it, you know, say like everything just is constantly changing, the problem is not as bad as you think, whatever the results end up showing you. But I think in terms of speaking to the born digital generation, I think you're going to do you can do less with that than you could speaking with the analog generation or digital immigrants or however you want to.
Great. Somebody down this line had a hand up.
Yeah, I guess I was taking a little different view towards the lack of importance in the question of the technology versus the norm drive, and particularly looking at it from
how you want to study and what do you want to promote? Are we legislating? Are we working with societal norms as the driving force, or are we working with trying to drive technology and then see what comes out of that? And that, I think, really focuses where you want to focus, particularly your legislation, what their concerns are, what, you know, are we worried about technology that can suddenly infringe on rights, mm-hmm. or are we worrying instead on what the social norms are and what people are doing with stuff out there? And which is coming first and which is really the driving force is probably more important as to who is actually making decisions about how we're going forward. Not necessarily, the end result may be the same, but in terms of how you pitch it and how you want to present to people, I think it is probably a pretty important question.
Right.
And my other thought, this is going on as well, is we're digital natives are just coming up now. I mean, we're talking about a generation which at most is 10 years old. You know, and what is coming out of that? What are the norms? What are the social norms of this next generation versus technology? There are, you know, Facebook and MySpace and everything else are just probably the tip of the iceberg at this point.
Yep.
And where it's going, is the bigger question, because this next generation that's coming up is going to really explode with it. And that's, I guess my view is directing that from what their norms are or should be, more so than the technology or what they're doing with it, but creating a structure that's going to work not with technology based, not with but with where you want a general society to be is probably the better way to go with it.
So just to extract a kernel from that may be relevant in terms of talking about what we want to do with this. We've, at least Orson and I, and I think Aaron and others, have drunk the Larry Lessig Kool-Aid, that there's East Coast code, right? There are regular old laws, the Deleting Online Predators Act, like really bad East Coast laws that shouldn't get passed. There are some good ones of those sort, right? They're regulatory things. But then there are also multiple other modes of regulatory action, right? So one of the key points of this effort is to say, yeah, social norms are themselves a regulatory function or serve a regulatory function. Markets do too. Technology does too. Jonathan Citrin's working on a fifth theory to change this, which is his idea of the herdict. But in any event, to broaden the scope of what can be done about it beyond the let's just pass a law to maybe pass a law, if that's the right way to do it, but then here are these other ways to regulate, so that's important. Urs Gasser, are you on the phone? Can you hear us?
Urs?
Maybe he's muted?
He's on there.
He's on there?
He just speak up.
Urs?
Yes, sir.
Worse. can you hear us when we talk through the speakerphone? Okay, I'm putting you back on speaker.
Hey, Urs, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
All right.
I'm
back. Urs, you unfortunately missed this great interchange, but it continues. And I wonder if we could turn it over to you briefly, and you may have to shout, and we'll press plus on the button because you're now on a speakerphone. Maybe tell us, you know, one of the things we want to try to do here is to say, despite the scope and scale problem of doing something internationally or cross-culturally, we think this is really important for this project, among others, as we see a global generation emerging here, not just a single cultural generation. And maybe, could you talk to the why this ought to be done as a partnership between the Berkman Center and your center in Switzerland, and how, you know, some of the concerns and questions we have coming out of that collaboration. No?
He's on a bit of a lag.
Oh, I see. Is it a voice?
He's probably listening to the feed.
I see. All right, I think we're going to let Urs speak up whenever he wants to, but we should probably return to the in-room participants because I think it's not playing out. Yep.
I want to follow up a little bit on what you were saying there, and I guess my view would be the specific acts going after the predators is almost a byproduct of looking at it from the technological side. Here's the technology, how do we handle that, as opposed to going after it from the norms, how are people behaving in general side. And I think that kind of, at least in my mind, is why it's important to still identify which is coming, which is the driving force. So the people who are passing the laws, we can identify that and say, don't pay attention to the technology. Here's the societal norms which are also driving this.
It's the chicken, not the egg.
That's right.
I was curious, is it possible that you can pick some of these digital natives to be part of some type of qualitative research? Sort of like, you know, the movies Michael Apted, 7-Up, 14-Up. Like, you know, like sort of like how they use it when they're middle schoolers versus how they use it when they're Yeah, we years versus, you know, something, because since this is the new generation, that would be a great historical precedent, mm-hmm. saying, like, sometimes they say, oh my, you know, sort of like when people get a tattoo, say, oh my God, I can't believe I got this tattoo, and then you go through the pain of burning it off. It's sort of like, I can't believe I put myself up there. You know, that, in order to keep, get an idea of help in terms of legislation and privacy, because sometimes, just like young people think they're immortal, which is why they drive really fast. I used to do that. I'm admitting it. But the same thing that you just think, oh, I can just tell everybody everything, but it may be held against you. I happen to know one of my young lady who's, she just finished mechanical engineering at MIT, and her classmate at University of Texas, Austin, lost a really good chance to work with Senator Clinton for the presidential race, mm-hmm. because she, it wasn't Girls Gone Wild, but let's just say Girls Gone Extra Mild, you know, she had like one of those, you know, what she did to herself, and my friend says, what was in her mind? I said, well, maybe she wasn't in her right mind, but she basically cost herself a plum, like one of those White House fellow kind of jobs because of her behavior online.
Would you guys respond to this in terms of, so there's this great opportunity as digital natives to some extent yourselves and members of the team.
And I did check out your MySpace.
Maybe we made them for you.
What are you hiding? Why
did you have one?
What would you like us to address?
You've had a comment here that basically says, to me I hear it as, there are some really cool things you could do with this research project, one of which is itself methodological and is in its way recursive, which is if digital natives are part of the researchers here who might be able in some ways to reflect on their own experience, maybe one point is you can do it longitudinally, which is you yourself could be studying and studied. Maybe the sociologists and people who really do methodology will say this is a terrible idea, but likewise, I mean, going into the social networks themselves and doing stuff, there's a Heisenbergian problem here, but, you know, is that a an appropriate and fun and useful way to do research in this space? And I guess it really is open-endedly, like, what is it that we could do differently by virtue of you guys being involved and the nature of the medium? Charlie, jump in.
I think just looking at the way people, I mean, you know, earlier this year, like over the course of the year, I saw a lot of my older friends who were looking to, you know, obviously get involved in more serious jobs, you know, gradually disable more and more parts of the life. First it was the pictures, then, you know, the wall and everything else. So it was just like a picture, exactly, contact information.
Right.
And so I think
it's a headshot from the firm, right? Tie.
Yeah. Not even the color. And,
grayscale, that's the future.
And I think just even in such a, you know, short time period, I mean, a lot of the, I mean, juniors and seniors in college now have only had Facebook for, I guess now it's been almost 2 years. But I mean, even in that 2 year period, how, you know, things really expanded quickly and, you know, it was really became a medium in and of itself. And I think by studying that and seeing how, I think, you know, looking at kind of a gradual interview process, you know, where you ask people at different stages how they use it. I mean, mm-hmm. even in the years between, you know, sophomore and senior year,
yeah.
people mm-hmm. able to use changes drastically.
The changes over time, I think, are interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, I mean, even as someone who's only been at the college for a year, I can give examples of both myself and other people who you get to college, or this tool is created, so it's Facebook or MySpace or whatever, and you put all kinds of information up, and you don't realize the implications of putting that much of yourself online. And just like Charlie said, for people who are going to get a job, they slowly cut back. I see people doing that even when they're not getting a job, maybe because of it, in advance of doing that. They start to cut back and limit who can access it or what goes online, and parts of the profile disappear. I think that happens a lot. You talk about comparative advantage. You say, what is the comparative advantage of having, you know, the three of us who are RAs in the project, who are digital natives ourselves, you could say. I think the comparative advantage of that is that we could help guide the questions we ask the younger digital natives that we aim to study, because we've sort of been there, and we know sort of where they're coming from. But I have a younger sister, and she uses the internet at a much younger age than I did, and even in different ways than I do. So we could help guide the questions we ask them. I think that's where we could come in pretty helpful. But to study ourselves.
Seems complicated. Miriam, and then back row question.
I think something really interesting in terms of talking about, you know, people are going to get a job and they're cutting things back. I've definitely noticed that trend in being like 1 year out of college myself. But I think that, and this is a debate we've been having as well, of whether, you know, this is just, these are new tools, these are what people are doing, they're going to realize the repercussions of it and they're going to get off. Or is this, you know, something that people are going to do and employers are just going to have to deal with it? Everybody's going to have something online. You know, it, I guess...
I recommend the Harvard Business Review this month has a case on this topic, including something from David as well.
Definitely. And I think I would, I mean, you know, as the people that are graduating now have been on the social networking for 4 years, the upcoming generation, this is the tip of the iceberg, the upcoming generation is going to be on there since whatever age. At what point are you really going to scale back? And, you know, maybe this kind of, right now, this coming back from Facebook, you know, getting everything off because you're applying for a job, you're applying for an internship, is something akin to, you know, stranger danger, just kind of gut reactions that isn't going to really hold true for the long run. And, sorry.
No, just, keep going.
One other point about studying ourselves and having digital natives. I don't think we can study ourselves either, but, but I think something...
Intriguing question. Not the way forward, right?
But I think something really interesting that's going to come out, I know this summer we're kind of planning on doing just a handful of pilot interviews, is that digital natives are... Even from my experience, starting to, you know, really delve into these... into Facebook that I've been on for 2 years, I think very little of decisions that are made are conscious. I think that's why people... all of a sudden when they're hearing these stories about their friends not being hired, this is why people are moving back and all of a sudden reassessing. But a lot of the stuff isn't conscious, it's just kind of coming out. And I think that a kind of a big issue to take into account to deal with is that once we start these interviews, this is going to start a reflection process within the people that we're interviewing. And that I think is huge, and maybe following up with that a month, 6 months, 3 months later, just because you asked the question, that just hasn't been...
Right.
Or even ethically, we were thinking about, you know, we kind of have to let these students know that we're going to be looking at their Facebook profile with them, because you don't want to spring that on them in the interview, but then, you know, what does that do? Are they going to censor their profile? And so then in that sense, is it a real...
Stuff.
Yeah.
Back row and then this one.
I'm just wondering, in terms of what you might produce from this, if... you might produce a set of guidelines and resources for, I'm calling it triage, I don't know if that's exactly the right word, because when I think of regulation, I'm thinking that you can protect against the hazards of uses of the digital technology, but you can also promote the benefits of it. And I'm also thinking that you're really working with the interests, overlapping interests of several groups, lawmakers, educators, parents, digital natives themselves. And so one of the questions is, what's the appropriate and most effective level of response, both in promoting benefits and in protecting against hazards? You know, I mean, digital natives themselves are developing their own kind of self-regulation and regulation of the community. So it might be helpful to have, you know, gather this wisdom if you're going through the interviewing process, and just think about how can that be shared, both with supports and with resources, and then just, you know, what's the thinking process about what's the appropriate level of response?
And I can put Aaron on the spot to talk about the wiki in part.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And one of our outputs is definitely our wiki that's in progress now, that we've kind of been thinking of as a research tool, but also very much a place for educators and parents and any interested stakeholders can join the conversation and say, wait, those aren't really the issues, this is how I view it. So it's kind of a work in progress. There it is right there. So that's just one kind of, while we're doing the actual research, it's kind of developing and changing every day, so.
And we actually, we
can see that coming, you know, resulting in some types of collaborative responses at different levels.
For sure. And that's also, it's an open wiki, so anybody could go on there right now. Spammers have already discovered this, but can go on there.
Let me know your account and I'll authorize you.
Digital natives sharing their experiences of applying for jobs or things like that.
We want their narrative sessions on there for exactly that purpose. Yeah.
And maybe that results in some kind of policy action, but it's a combination of.
And we're also thinking of, I mean, to get at the digital natives perspective, Chin's been thinking a lot about the Facebook app and how can we use that application in our research to kind of get youth who are on Facebook already talking about their experiences. So, you know, whether it's like a little quiz of, are you a digital native? And then they get a badge on their profile and can start the conversation. So that's another question we have is how can we use these online tools that they're already using to contribute to the work that we're doing?
Just a couple of, I guess my comment has to do with some of the empirical issues that are raised through a number of these suggestions from the Harvard students.
Yeah,
Miriam, and Aaron touched upon these issues too. I think there's obviously a need and a desire to do longitudinal research at this point.
We feel it.
We all want to do it, but the problem that it raises, the most obvious, from my perspective, is the issue of what can we attribute to developmental levels, whether we're thinking of talking cultural and whatever, versus properties of the technology. Mm-hmm. And I think this is when, to me, what becomes obvious is really the need for strong collaborations between projects and teams.
Yeah.
We at Project Zero may be particularly good at identifying these developmental levels or knowing how to ask about them, whereas the Berkman Center, at least as an outsider, seems to be much more well-versed in understanding the properties of the technology. Approach those.
I hope that you're right, though. I'm not sure that's true.
Outside perspective. So, those are just the very quick questions that come to my mind. Mm-hmm. How can we collaborate, even in, you know, talking about a Facebook app? Sounds great. Our project would love to do that, too. So,
The answer is yes to that. And part of the mode here is we recognize we do not. Not only not have all the answers, we don't even know how to ask all the right questions, ultimately. And one of the things that we're most excited about being at the Berkman Center is the possibility of collaboration, the possibility of doing interdisciplinary research, and to do it with people close at home and people further away. So we would love to. I mean, this sounds like a conversation that should happen, and we welcome it hugely. I realize there's a risk anytime when you're Harvard to step into an area and say, we're doing a big project in this area, and we really don't want to do that. You know, and we want to be good citizens and players and collaborators and actually add some value. So thank you for the comment. It's clearly great.
I just had a comment when people are, you know, getting very...
Maybe speak up just a bit.
Oh, when people are getting very carried away and, oh, let's do this with a Facebook app. You already said earlier that Facebook already has lots of methodologies in place for basically triage control. Mm-hmm. If I have something embarrassing and then I realize I have a job interview, I can get rid of it. I was wondering how you would study things that you may not necessarily be able to get rid of as well. Things like, places like MySpace have a greater forum for like other people talking about you that you cannot control. And I feel like that might be a better thing to study in terms of looking at social norms and technology, because that would be more of a place where a policy needs to be either implemented or to study if a policy is already like socially enforced. Like if there are people who are like, you shouldn't have that, even if it's not a law. Because Facebook has, based on, because I think partly a reaction from people, Facebook already has ways of damage control, whereas there are other places on the internet that don't.
Yep.
And I think the difference between those two is significant.
And one thing I think, and we've been talking a lot about that too, like, do we study MySpace this summer or Facebook, and what tools are youth really using? And I read this great quote recently from a teen that said that MySpace was the gateway drug, and now Facebook is all the rage.
It's Bizanga, right?
Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, it's getting to that, because MySpace is a very interesting space, and there are so many issues wrapped up in there, but also recognizing we need to study the tools that are emerging. And
I just wanted to make a brief technological note. Not the project is mainly literacies. We also had a wiki that we tried to engage teachers and educators in.
No dice.
The problem is that often in this kind of research that the people who go on this type of site are already self-selected to be more comfortable with technology. Uh-huh. So perhaps like a more diverse, you know, approach to reaching these other voices. Uh-huh. Because they're going to be, there's a lot of teachers that we've encountered who are just afraid of this technology, especially Wikis. So they're impressed, but they're always changing.
Yeah, it's a fun. I love the theme of stability, I have to say. I mean, to Miriam's question before, like, what is stable about what's happening in this space? What's going to be enduring? You know, and what are people going to continue to do? What are people going to change over time? And likewise, I think the environment itself is unstable. And so, you know, how do we kind of react to that? It's a good problem.
But even if there's some way to reach people offline.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's a really good point. A good suggestion. Anybody who has not yet talked for a comment? Amr, is your hand up back there or no? That's just resting?
It's not, but there are a lot of comments from Doc.
Oh, yeah, all right. Channel.
I'm not sure where to start.
Pick a good one. but one, that's
one of the points that he makes is that Mark Anderson says that all technology tends to start with technologists.
Uh-huh.
We need to start with geeks here and how they make the natural building materials on which the rest of us rely to build on our new world. Uh-huh. And he mentions the LAMP, like Linux, Apache, MySQL, yep. Perl, Python. Stack is only 10 years old and has grown in that time from two letters, LA, to perhaps 200,000. Each of these operate on NEA assumptions. Nobody owns it. And the case studies of individuals across... So I'm not sure what the point is trying to make.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good. It's out of sequence, but it's great. Yeah. what else does Doc say?
Another point he makes is that we need to look at digital nativeness in terms of because effects.
Uh-huh.
And he says that JP and others, including Doc and JP Ramaswamy, I've talked about this before, and we need to go beyond understanding our new native habitat as merely a public good or an externality to economics as usual. It is an internality, one with enormous because effects, that is much more economic activity happens because of it and, than with it.
That sounds deep. We'll have to ask Doc more about it over time. Sebastian?
I just had a comment on a couple of the pieces that came out of the comments that went around, like the 7-Up and 4-Up stuff. I was familiar with how they studied the people over 7 years, and then they made a movie out of it every 7 years.
The kids
as they went up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this isn't necessarily possible to do, but if you think of the idea of digital nativeness, like itself.
Is it nativity or nativeness? How far do we want to extend that?
Nativity would have been the Unimax.
It's great humor.
But when you think of the fact of your children, and those who have children will possibly more understand this than those who don't, they learn a lot from you. And, you know, nature versus nurture, and what's inherent and what's learned. When you think of that, I don't know if you could necessarily call a digital native anyone but what we're calling a digital native now's child. Because what they're really going to learn is sort of the implicit notions and the sort of interwoven ability to integrate with technology and integrate with a lot of the stuff that they do.
Yep.
From their parents.
So wait 10 years or 20 years.
So wait 20 years, and in 20 years you'll see a true digital native. Because maybe what we're seeing now is we're seeing childhood digitals. We're seeing people who act like children on the internet. So we're seeing digital children. We're not seeing digital natives. We're seeing how to learn to be a digital persona. Because all this activity that we're talking about, being irresponsible, driving fast, putting up stuff that you shouldn't necessarily put up there, disobeying rules, you know, the explosion and the, you know, you see the troughs and the valleys, these huge peaks of interesting stuff, and then these huge lows of, like, you know, dead behavior is sort of like, if you look at your children, they sort of do the same thing. Like, they figure stuff out, and then it's like, they play with that for like a month until they break it in half, and then they'll move on to the next thing. And I'm wondering, like, have you guys thought of what it is necessarily to be when you want to talk about being a true digital native, how that'll factor in terms of
It's a great comment. Lots of food for thought.
I wonder, actually, though, with that, if the question is looking at this generation gap, it sounds like that generation gap might be smaller in some ways. The digital children's children might be a smaller generation gap than the one that we have between that didn't grow up with technology and that did grow up with technology.
Yeah. I mean, because with the, like, the baby boomers, the baby boomers were the children of the World War era. And so they have, like, this interesting set of values where, you know, you have all these people that are anti-war and all this stuff because of the stuff that they gathered from their parents. And then you have maybe, you know, the children of those children, which I suppose is Generation X, those have the values of their hippie parents. I mean, to be generalist about this, and they incorporate that. And so you have then the children of the digital natives, which will then incorporate, like, technology sort of implicit. And
you've taken recursion to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Catherine Bracey has not said anything, then Isaac gets the last word.
Well, if the digital children's parents don't have any parents, then I think that first generation of real digital children are going to be pretty dysfunctional. I mean, unless someone like John Palfrey can come up with some way to educate those parents.
That's on Aaron Mishkin's shoulder.
Or Aaron. So I think it speaks more to, you know, getting something together that can be more rational that about, you know, online predators or whatever than Dateline, Chris Hansen, and hidden cameras in a kitchen in San Diego. If this set of digital natives is the one teaching the next generation what online values should be, I would be scared for the next generation of digital natives because they have no real guidance.
I think the only valid assumption to make in this situation is that when this group of digital natives being studied now are mature adults, the technological circumstances may be so wildly, wildly different that an entire new the study will have to be done all over again because these children are now playing, you know, with something like highly holographic or.
And to Sebastian's point the other day, it's going to be maybe not looking at screens anymore, right?
So I think perhaps aside from thinking of keeping the idea that this research should have enduring value in mind when doing it might be like all you can do as far as, and circumstances will dictate what is and what is not enduring and what needs to be redone.
I knew you had the perfect closing comment. That's good. Do enduring research. Well, by way of final words, thank you so much for this engagement, and I hope it's the beginning of a conversation. And by way of invitation, this is we want to kind of prove the concept of an interdisciplinary, open, you know, involved, connected research project, and we'd love all of your help. Aaron and others are cranking on it all summer, and we're an open house, so please come back and talk, and let's figure out how we can work together. So thank you.
Thank you.